This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We'll be taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Governor, thank you so much for being here in the busy holiday season. It's just rare for us to have a Let Me Speak to the Governor in December, so thanks so much.
Well, Maria, I know we hadn't done one in December before, and so I was really excited. I had some time this week and told my team that I definitely wanted to do it. I wanted to hear what's on the minds of Utahns as we head into this holiday break. I hope people get a break at least a little bit. It's an amazing time of year, a very special time. To hopefully everybody gets to be surrounded by friends and family. And
hopefully some de-stress.
I hope so. I definitely need it. You need it. We all need it right now.
No doubt about it. So, Governor, let's start with probably the top story of the day. Since late yesterday afternoon, many people talking about the Colorado Supreme Court banning former President Trump from its ballot. I would like to get your perspective on this.
Sure. So there's, I think there's two perspectives. So one is a legal perspective. And as an attorney who used to do some constitutional law, I kind of love this stuff. It's really interesting to me. There have been several law review articles written by wonderful professors all across the country on this issue over the past couple of months, knowing that it might come up. I think Minnesota has a proceeding happening. Obviously the Colorado one yesterday. So from a legal perspective, I understand the arguments that are being made under the 14th Amendment, Section 3. This was a Civil War era amendment that was meant to keep potentially those who were part of the biggest insurrection in our nation's history, a literal civil war, from being on the ballot without approval of the legislature. By the way, most of there is a provision in there that allows a vote of Congress to allow people on the ballot who have participated or supported an insurrection. And most of those people, interestingly, were allowed on the ballots. That was a change that was made. I think Jefferson Davis wasn't, and maybe Robert E. Lee, they kept him for them. But everybody else was allowed on the ballot. So it's this interesting historical construct. There is a lot of debate over whether this applies to the president of the United States. It doesn't specifically say president of the United States. It does say senators and Congress and electors, but it doesn't specifically say the president of the United States. Now, there's a very interesting legal argument that it does apply to the president, but you have to get into what the words of and under mean and whether the office of the United States is an officer of the United States is a term of art or not, and then whether or not this is an insurrection, if January 6th would actually apply here or not. There are lots of really interesting legal questions, only interesting if you're into this kind of stuff. The average person is probably rolling their eyes right now and saying, you've taken way too long to answer this question anyway. But my point is this. In election law, in the state of Utah, we have lots of election lawsuits. Really, every year we deal with election lawsuits. There's this legal theory that if it's even a close call at all, you always allow the person on the ballot. You let the people decide if they want the person on the ballot or not, if they want the person in elected office or not. I believe this is a close call, and as such, I believe that the president should be on the ballot. From a practical standpoint, I think it's a really bad idea to keep people off. By the way, I didn't like it when President Trump tried to keep people off the ballot, and he did. He often argued that people should be excluded from the ballot. He did it with Republicans. He did it with Ted Cruz. He's tried to make arguments against Ron DeSantis that he should be kicked off the ballot. He certainly made it with Hillary, and he made it with Obama back in the day that Obama should not have been on the ballot. So I thought it was wrong when Trump tried to do it, and I think it's a mistake that the Colorado Supreme Court has made. Ultimately, the great thing about our legal system is we have an ability to appeal those decisions. And I think the Supreme Court will ultimately decide, the U.S. Supreme Court. And I feel pretty confident that he will be on the ballot in Colorado.
Definitely an interesting constitutional test. But what do you see as maybe being the consequences for the country.
Well, yeah. So that's, again, that's where kind of the practical side of it also makes me think it's a bad idea. Again, we are in this heated election cycle, or heading into a heated election cycle, where the people are going to weigh in. I will say, for those that don't want Trump to be the president, anytime something like this happens, it tends to strengthen him, where he gets to be the victim, and so all of those arguments, I think, are in play here. So I think there's that tract as well. But again, just from the democratic principles that we hold so dear, and I just feel that I've said many times that I would prefer someone else to be the president. I've talked about supporting Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley. I think we have so many other amazing opportunities that would actually be better and would get more accomplished and not bring all of the baggage that President Trump brings with him. But all of that being said, I think the people should decide that, not just a small group of judges in Colorado.
Right. Well, let's move to local politics for a moment then. Utah's Attorney General Sean Reyes has said that he's not going to run for re-election. Given his relationship or his tie to OUR, should Sean Reyes stay in office?
Well, I've had conversations with Sean. We talked about his decision before he made the decision not to run again. I think it was the right decision for him. I think it was the right decision for his family, and I think it's a good decision for the state. I think I've said that even though we don't have term limits in our state, I've said I'm only going to serve for 2 terms. I think it's important to give other people an opportunity. And I've always said, if I can't accomplish the things I want to accomplish in 8 years, then I probably shouldn't be the governor. Someone else should have an opportunity to do that. He will have been in office 11 years, almost 12 years. He took over that first term was a partial term. And so I think, again, I think it's the right decision. Ultimately, that's up to him whether he should, whether he wants to resign. He has said he doesn't. He wants to keep going. I thought in his announcement, he was very clear about the OUR, his announcement that he wasn't running again. The problems that he's learned about with OUR, the allegations against Tim Ballard and his feelings towards those people who have made those allegations. He said that he's met with them and had those conversations. And so I know there's investigations happening. There's an audit that the legislature has approved for the Attorney General's office. But my hope, whatever happens there, is that we can continue to work with Attorney General Reyes. He's got some amazing people that work in the Attorney General's office as well. And that whatever the next year holds, that we'll be able to serve the people of Utah well.
Callers are starting to line up, okay. So we're going to take a break, come back with their calls. Number for you to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us, 57500.
Get your questions answered by Governor Spencer Cox. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining this afternoon for Let Me Speak to the Governor. Maria Chalais, along with Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls. First caller is Noam in Harriman. And good afternoon. What is your question for the governor?
Yes, Governor Cox. I'm my better self or best self, and I think you are too. And, our actions reinforce our commitment to decency and disagreeing civilly. And admittedly, I'm someone who's slightly left of center, but, when I saw you launch a pre-election attack on university diversity initiatives to appeal to your, what I think is your political base, because you're not trying to appeal to someone like me, when you articulate those views. And then, you did it again today where you're very equivocal with respect to Trump. I don't understand why you refuse to say never to a man who's a bigot, an anti-Semite, a misogynist, a traitor, an insurrectionist, and just a bad human being, which I think is completely contrary to who you are. And I honestly, I see these, your reluctance. You saw what happened to Mitt Romney with respect to Trump. And You know the Attack on Diversity Initiative's plays to the dog whistle to a certain segment, a significant segment of your base. And I just, you know, given who I think you are and who you know you are, is it worth staying governor to take these, to take these positions? I wouldn't do it. Thank you for listening.
You're welcome, Noam, and thank you for calling in. And I appreciate. I don't know if there was I guess there was a question in there, and so let me respond. There were two pieces to that I think are important. And despite what you may think, and if you actually listen to what I said today about the DEI initiatives and what is happening out there, I think what you would hear is a very thoughtful, I hope thoughtful and nuanced approach to what I believe is a real problem. And this isn't me just pandering to a base at all. I have a very broad high approval rating right now. I'm very comfortable with who I am and what I believe in, and I believe that the DEI initiatives in our universities are not accomplishing the things that they were set out to accomplish. I agree that there is value in diversity, that there is great value in equality. In fact, it's in our founding documents. It actually precedes life, liberty, and happiness in the Declaration of Independence. Equality is something we should absolutely strive for, and we have striven for, and are doing a better job of throughout the course of history. We still have a ways to go on that one. Inclusion is critical, and I will make the argument, and I will make it strongly, that what is happening in many of our universities, not all, and with many of our diversity initiatives in our universities is not inclusive. It is the exact opposite. It is exclusive, and it is driving a wedge between people in our state and in our universities, and it has become incredibly political and a way to dismiss disagreement and viewpoint diversity in our universities, which is hampering them in big ways and taking them away from their core mission, which is truth. And that cannot happen with the way they're being operated now. So you will see me speak out vociferously in a way that we can find a way to actually accomplish what they were originally intended to do. And that is to help people who are struggling, to remove barriers, to make sure that everyone has an opportunity. It's about opportunity. That's what our nation is about. That's what our state is about. I'm very proud that just yesterday, a new study came out that showed that Utah leads the nation in social mobility, the American dream. It's the number one state in the country for people to be able to achieve their dreams. And I want that for everyone, brown kids, black kids, white kids, rural kids, males, females, everyone should have those opportunities. And that's what we're about. When it comes to President Trump, I don't think you will find many governors in this country who have spoken out more against the terrible things that President Trump has done. I've worked hard to hold him accountable. I've said very clearly that I want someone else to be president, and I will continue to do that. But I also respect people, and I think this is the question that you should ask yourself: why are so many people interested in Donald Trump and what he represents? What is it that is causing people and driving people towards someone who does so many difficult and awful things? That's the question. I care about those people. These are people I love, people in rural Utah, people that I care about, and helping them to understand what it is that is impacting their lives in such a way, how our state has failed them, how our country has failed them, how the media has failed them, and what would drive them to support someone like that. And that's the question I'm much more interested in.
Noam, thanks for your call. Let's go to Randy now, who's in Stansbury Park. Good afternoon, Randy.
Good afternoon, Governor. Thank you for your service. I just wanted to call in and tell you I appreciate your approach to governance. I think I align very well with you as a political leader. And I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas, and thanks for all you do.
Well, Randy, that is so very kind. I want to thank you. This is why I love living in Utah. We have so many good people out there who care, who want to give back, who want to make the world a better place. Randy, even if you don't agree with me lots of times, I'm really grateful for your kindness. In these positions these days, we tend to hear from the people who disagree with us a lot more than we hear from the people who agree with us. And so it's kind of you. I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. whatever you celebrate. I hope it's a great time of year, surrounded with people you love and care about.
All right. Thank you, Randy. First texter wants to know, Governor, what are your long-term solutions and plans for Utah's water situation with our growing population and limited water supply?
Yeah, no, this is something we've been working on very, very hard over the past couple of years. Proud of the legislature and our water districts, and mostly I'm proud of Utahns who have stepped up in a big way. So Utah's this past legislative session, we looked at some long-term investments in water conservation, efficiency, infrastructure. We know that one good winter doesn't solve everything, and so we're preparing for future drought and for future growth. So just a couple highlights. We passed $500 million this past year in one-time investments on top of $500 million last year, so $1 billion in water conservation and infrastructure investments. This is where one of the things I'm really excited about. Utahns have swapped out about 4 million square feet of thirsty grass for water-wise landscapes, and that's awesome. We've issued about $5 million in rebates there. We're working with our farmers, significant investments in farming to adopt efficient irrigation methods, new technology. We're working to improve secondary water metering as well. We've got some, we have specifically to the Great Salt Lake, we have a new commissioner of the Great Salt Lake, and I just got a copy of his first report that was due to us. That will be released coming up the first part of January. So we're very excited about that. For the first time, we are all working together on the Great Salt Lake. And some really good news right now, our reservoirs are about 20% higher than average. And I can't believe I'm saying that 2 years ago when they were almost 20% below average. It's a huge deal for our state. And I feel much more confident about the future of our long-term water outlook here.
And that's even though we haven't had very many storms in the last few weeks.
That's correct. Yeah, we're about 12% below normal for this time of year. So not too bad. That's one storm can bring us back up to normal. But we are a little behind. I know we've got some, we got a storm coming up this weekend that we're all excited about. But keep praying. We definitely need more moisture, but we are doing more than just praying. We are actually investing in big ways to secure our water future.
Next listener wants to know, are there going to be any tax cuts this year?
Yeah, probably. So we're still having those discussions with the legislature. We proposed a tax cut for families with children, and I think that will. I think the legislature is going to support that. There's more talk about potentially having another income tax cut. We're having those discussions right now. That's something I would support. We cut taxes last year over the last 3 years. So during my administration, almost $900 million in tax cuts. That's triple the largest tax cuts of any administration in the history of our state. And the cool thing is that Utahns are going to get a chance for another tax cut. They get to vote on reducing or eliminating the sales tax on food, the state sales tax on food. That's a $200 million tax cut. That would put us over $1 billion. I'm going to be voting to remove the sales tax on food. And I hope our citizens will as well.
Okay, we need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Interestingly enough, during this very busy holiday week, we have a lot of people calling, Governor. Let's go to Linda, who is on the line in Salt Lake City. And good afternoon, Linda. What was your question?
I'm really concerned about gerrymandering. I mean, I live here in Salt Lake, but I feel like I can't vote for a lot of things because I'm in District 1. And so I'm wondering, do I even get to vote for the mayor in Salt Lake? I mean, I feel like I don't live here anymore. I don't like gerrymandering. I don't understand it. And it makes me feel, you know, for example, if my congressman that I call lives in Ogden. And it's just things like that that it bothers me. And I thought in election, when we had the election in 2016, mean, they had us vote on gerrymandering, and I thought we won. But I guess we didn't, because the Congress did what they wanted anyway. But I honestly thought that that was voted against. But
Thank you, Linda, for that question. You may have been cut off there, but I think I understand the question. So lots of people have concerns about gerrymandering, for sure. So just so you know, I think what your concern is are the congressional districts. So there haven't been too many allegations of gerrymandering when it comes to our legislative districts. Obviously, senators are statewide, and so mostly the concern has been around members of Congress, the four congressional districts. If you do live in the first district, that again, all four districts are represented in Salt Lake and outside of Salt Lake, and that's the concern, that Salt Lake got divided up. Some place has to get divided up every year or every 10 years, and the legislature decided to divide up Salt Lake City. Now, of course, we have a conservative legislature. There was an initiative that it sounds like you voted for that did pass, and there is a lawsuit now that is moving forward, and so ultimately a judge will decide whether or not the legislature violated those provisions. If there was gerrymandering, stay tuned. We'll find out. I will say, if you do live in the first district, I think your representative does live in Salt Lake. I know he grew up in northern Utah, but I think he does live in Salt Lake. We have representatives in the second and fourth district who live in Utah County, and then now for the first time, people are really excited, I can tell you, to have a representative, Celeste Malloy, who lives in the she's in the third district. And now I've got these mixed up. Sorry, I'm getting them all mixed up. We've got Congressman Curtis. Anyway, she's from Southern Utah, and we're really excited to have Celeste in Southern Utah for the first time to have a representative off the Wasatch Front. I will say to your concern, Linda, lots of people have been concerned that we only had members of Congress from the Wasatch Front, and we needed some representation off there. So there are different viewpoints on this one, but I want to assure you that you still get to vote for mayor. That has nothing to do with gerrymandering at all. You still get to vote for governor. You still get to vote for your legislative representative. You still get to vote for the city council. That's not impacted by gerrymandering at all.
Next, and sorry, Linda, you were mistakenly cut off. We didn't cut you off intentionally there. Next listener would like to know, what is your office doing to reduce smog inversions in the future?
Yeah, well, thank you. So we're doing nothing to prevent inversions from the future.
Come on.
Inversions.
Where's that big fan?
Inversions are natural. There is nothing we can do about inversions. I'm so sorry. I wish we could prevent them from happening. They happened before anyone lived in these valleys. They will happen for generations to come. Inversion is a natural thing that happens in lots of valleys all across the country. Whenever you have kind of a bowl and a high pressure moves in and traps cold air underneath. That's all an inversion is. The Native Americans who lived in these valleys called it the Valley of Smoke for a reason, because their fires trapped the smoke in there. Also, the air would look like this even if we did nothing. The water vapor from the Great Salt Lake makes the air look like this as well. Now, all of that being said, let me be very clear. What we can do is reduce the amount of pollution that gets trapped in here during an inversion, and we have been. It may surprise you to know that we've had a 46% reduction in per capita emissions in this valley over the past 20 years. The air, I know people don't like to hear this, but it's scientifically proven, the air in our state is cleaner now than it's ever been in any of our lifetimes. So we are making significant strides. That being said, we still have a long ways to go. I would love to get our air cleaner. We're working on that. Electric vehicles will certainly help with that. Tier 3 gasoline, which we've helped the refineries switch to Tier 3 gasoline, that's made a huge, huge impact. All of us can make a difference by using our gas burning vehicles less during these inversion time periods, turning down our thermostats a little bit during these time periods, because our homes are sources of these emissions. We're working to hold some of the biggest polluters more accountable and reduce their pollution as well. Most of the savings we've had have come from the from our from big companies that are polluters. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars to reduce pollution, and so industry has made a big difference. But we'll continue to work on that. But I just want to prepare people, like, we will always, for a couple weeks out of the year, have some bad air here. It's been that way since the natives were here. It will continue after that. But what we are doing is helping to clean that up even more.
Kurt is on the line in Woods Cross. Good afternoon, Kurt. What was your question?
Hey, I don't know if I really have a question. I want to kind of quote what Randy said. I'd like to call and tell him what a great job he's doing, and I appreciate what he does. Hope he has a great Christmas. There's only one thing I'd like to see him change, is that's his slowdown when he talks. I'm old.
Kurt.
But other than that, I want you guys to have a great Christmas.
Thank you, Kurt. Bless you, my friend. This is a problem I have. I'm a fast talker. I'm so sorry. I'm constantly being reminded to try to slow down, but I get so excited about the great things that are happening in Utah, and I just want to share it more. So, Kurt, thank you for the constructive criticism and the feedback, and I wish you a very Merry Christmas as well.
Merry Christmas, Kurt. Thanks for your call today. Bruce is now on the line in Salt Lake City. Bruce, what was your question this morning?
Yes, I have a question here. That tram that goes up Little Cottage Canyon, there's an option to put a train, the same type, goes up Pikes Peak in Colorado.
Bruce, yeah, thank you. So this question is about the proposal for a gondola. So we did, UDOT, who was responsible for this entire process, it's been several years in the making, took a lot of feedback. One of the options that they studied was a train. I will admit that was my preferred option. It's the thing I would have loved the most. When they looked at all the different options out there, the train option was far more expensive than any of the others. Now, there's always a possibility that technology will change, that will get cheaper, that there would be a way to make that happen. But as they looked at everything, the gondola won out over the train when they looked at how expensive it was, how much environmental damage would be done potentially to the canyon, and it ran out. But I love trains. The train that you mentioned to Pikes Peak, we've seen trains and gondolas in Europe in some of these mountain areas. But right now, just so you know, we're in the process of reviewing the legal challenges to that little Cottonwood Canyon record of decision, and so I can't talk a lot about the litigation piece of that. But what I can tell you is, under the proposal, there were two phases. So the first phase is an increase in bus service and kind of a mobility hub moving up the canyon. We're hoping to move forward on that while the litigation plays out, but certainly stay tuned.
What are your feelings on the gondola?
So I'm supportive of the gondola. Again, as I looked at all of the options on the table about what's happening in that canyon, what's happening with traffic, and looking at the cost of different proposals out there, I believe the gondola is, as much as I would have loved the train for the cost, the gondola was a better option.
Okay, number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. We're going to take a quick break. We'll also take your text questions at 57500.
Governor Spencer Cox is taking your questions right now. Call 801-575-8255 or text him at 57500. This is Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for this final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. Maria Chaleos, along with Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls and questions. Again, the number to call, 801-575-8255. We'll see how many people we can squeeze in here, Governor. Bronco is in Sandy. Good afternoon, Bronco. What was your question?
Hi, this is Bronco calling from Sandy, and I got a lot positive thinking about our government and also governor. But one thing I don't like it, it's our roads. It's a lot of roads, like highway service roads, like Bangerter 201, 1300 West Side. They are so bumpy. There's so a lot of holes on the bridges, on the road, on I-15 even, on 80. And what you gonna do about that? Because they tried to fix some holes, but looks like pretty bad job. I think my grandma could do better job than what they did.
Well, thank you for the feedback. I've talked about it before on this program. We last year was a really rough winter for our roads, and one of the difficulties we have is the freeze thaw cycle that some other states don't have to deal with. But because as it freezes and heats up, the road the road expands and contracts, and that leads to cracking, and that leads to potholes. And because we had the most snow on record last winter, it was a tough winter for our roads, especially some of our bridges, as you mentioned, on the west side on 215 on Bangor. And so we've tried to prioritize those projects to help fix those bridges. You mentioned there have been lots of projects to try to fill in those potholes. Some have worked better than others, but I'm grateful for the Department of Transportation, who is regularly working on these issues. I would encourage you, through the UDOT app, there's an opportunity to report whenever you see a major problem out there, so we can get out and fix it. We need the people of Utah to be our eyes and ears, and we're investing more money all of the time to make sure that we can keep up our roads and make sure they're the best roads in the country. So I apologize that you've had some bad experiences out there, but please know that it's a top priority to get those bridges and those repairs done as quickly as possible.
Governor, next texter wants to know how it's possible that if a woman's life is at risk, the doctor cannot terminate a pregnancy because politicians think they know what's best.
Well, if a woman's life is at risk, they can terminate a pregnancy in the state of Utah. We do have that exception here. And so there is some litigation going on about the abortion bills that were passed a couple years ago. But that piece is not being litigated. That piece is part of the existing law in the state of Utah.
I think we are hearing so much in the news about different states that we are getting a little bit confused.
Yeah, and there is an issue in Texas that is getting a lot of attention, but that is not true here.
Next listener is John in Salt Lake City, and good afternoon, John. What was your question?
My question, first of all, Governor Cox, thank you for your service. Happy holidays, you and your family. I run a management company. We manage condos, HOAs in downtown Salt Lake, City Creek. We have some real hot spots with homeless. Real problem I have is on First South and Second East.
Okay.
We've got a complex there that they've actually are getting into the building, stealing packages. I had one homeless individual get into an actual condo unit. The individual's out of town. They camped out there for 4 days until we found them, got him out, and they took all their personal information, but they stole them bikes. And I found one homeless camped out in a really nice lobby. All these condos have cameras and security, but I found this one individual had a pocket full of keys. Anyway, we contact the police. They come over, take a police report, and that's it. That's all we hear. And these guys, I'm not saying guys, these individuals are getting more aggressive.
Yep.
I'm just curious, what's our next step?
Yeah, John, thank you. So, look, I everything that you've said resonates, and it's something that, so this fall, I sat down with my team and said, hey, I'm seeing this happen, more aggressive, more issues. We're seeing it, sadly, in cities all across the country, but there's no way we're going to let this happen here. So we're going to get more aggressive. We're going to get involved. We've been working very closely with Salt Lake City. The state is taking a much more proactive role at my behest. I have a budget proposal that is very aggressive on this as well. And there are two pieces to it. One, more resources for people who are experiencing homelessness, and more accountability for people who are breaking the law, as you said. Additional resources for law enforcement. We have to fix our civil commitment laws for those people that are truly suffering from mental illness and substance abuse. There can be no more unsanctioned camping in our cities. We cannot allow that. You will see we've significantly upgraded our enforcement of unsanctioned camping over the past 5 or 6 weeks, and again, holding people accountable, getting them the resources they need, getting them committed to help if they're not able to function in society. All of those pieces so that this is not happening. This cannot happen. You can't cannot be afraid to have to take your kids to our parks, to walk down the street. You can't have people camping out in, you know, in condominium units, and we can't just arrest them and release them. That does not work. And so you're going to see us be much more aggressive this legislative session, and I'm hoping we can get those funding pieces done.
Governor, we're running short of time, so I'm just going to ask a few of these questions that are coming up rather than taking the calls. Jake in Magna wants to know, are there plans to have tracks or front runner to Magna?
Well, we'll be looking at that. In conjunction with the Olympics coming in 10 years, I believe there's an opportunity for us to expand tracks as we did for the 2002 Olympics. And so I don't know exactly where we'll be targeting, but I am hopeful that we can get more mass transit options to more people over the next 10 years.
Okay, Governor, just a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you about the encampments that Salt Lake City has set up. They've set up their first trial encampment for homeless people this week. Is that part of the solution? Do you see that as being a solution?
Yeah, I do. That is definitely part of the solution. We're working again with Salt Lake City. We have a new director of homelessness for the state. That's a new position. It's only been around for a couple of years. This is all very well designed. For the first time in our state's history, we have a comprehensive plan impacting homelessness, someplace for everyone to go to get them help, to get them back on the street, get them off the street, to hold them accountable, and to make sure that homelessness is rare and temporary, and that we can get people the help they need. This is one of those ideas. Encampment is probably the wrong term, because these are actual shelters that we're working on, and we want to eliminate camping itself, especially unsanctioned camping, and get people places where they can have a roof over their head, but also get the help they need, and not be violating, not be committing crimes, mm-hmm. and violating people's privacy or injuring people and themselves. There's nothing compassionate about letting people sleep on the streets. Nothing compassionate in that at all. There's nothing compassionate about not holding people accountable. It just leads to more misery and death. And these sanctioned spots, these temporary units, are a big piece of how we solve this.
Okay. How about Christmas? I just want to know what your favorite Christmas goodie is, since we have just a minute left.
Oh, my goodness.
Because some of these questions are pretty complicated. Yeah. I'm going to give you an easy one.
No, thank you. Thank you. All of them are my favorite. I'm a cookie guy, so I love cookies. This time of year, there's so many things to eat. I have to tell you, Maria, I wake up every morning. I exercise. I run for 3 to 5 miles. Mm-hmm. I lift. I'm ready to go. I start out with a protein shake, and I think today's the day. Today's the day. I'm not going to have sugar. I'm going to be healthy. I'm not going to gain any weight.
But you're doing all those things.
Well, by dinner, I'm just like eating caramels and cookies and cakes and everything. Every single day it goes like that. But maybe tomorrow will be the day.
All right. We have 30 seconds. What's your favorite holiday tradition?
So my favorite holiday tradition is being together with my family. And we have two kids that were married this year. So we have in-laws for the first time, and they were at the in-laws for Thanksgiving, but that means we get them for Christmas. So I've got my four kids and my two new daughters-in-law together. We'll read the Christmas story together. We'll sing some songs. We'll open presents. Pretty simple, but pretty impactful.
Governor, have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, Maria. Thank you.